Good morning. I told someone this morning, I keep meeting these really cool, awesome people in town, and then they say, I go to the UU Fellowship, and so I've just been waiting for this moment to come and meet the rest of you, because you are well represented in this community when it comes to the act of building community and weaving each other into the fabric of this life together. So thank you for the invitation to be here today. This morning, I'm going to share a bit from my sacred text from the book of Exodus, chapter 1, verses 1 through 14. These are the names of the sons of Israel who came to Egypt with Jacob, each with his household: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and Benjamin, Dan and Naphtali, Gad and Asher. The total number of people born to Jacob was 70. Joseph was already in Egypt. Then Joseph died, and all his brothers, and that whole generation. But the Israelites were fruitful and prolific. They multiplied and grew exceedingly strong, so that the land was filled with them. Now a new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph. He said to his people, "Look, the Israelite people are more numerous and more powerful than we. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, or they will increase and, in the event of war, join our enemies and fight against us and escape from the land." Therefore, they set taskmasters over them to oppress them with forced labor. They built supply cities, Pithom and Ramesses, for Pharaoh. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread, so that the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites. The Egyptians became ruthless in imposing tasks on the Israelites and made their lives bitter with hard service in mortar and brick and in every kind of field labor. They were ruthless in all the tasks that they imposed on them. I am a Cumberland Presbyterian minister, and I guess in the scheme of things, I haven't really been one for very long. And being from a small denomination, I've had the opportunity to do some pretty cool things that I wouldn't maybe otherwise be able to do in a larger denomination. And one of those things that I've had the honor to do is to fill the seat on behalf of my denomination with National Farm Worker Ministry on their board. And my first meeting was in January 2014 in Bakersfield, California. At the time, I didn't know a whole lot about the history of farm worker justice. But at this meeting, I sat at the table with people who had marched with Cesar Chavez, people who know Dolores Huerta, whose baby's first words were lettuce and grapes and boycott. These were people from all over the country on this board and from all kinds of churches and religious orders, people with a deep dedication to the pursuit of God's justice, people who felt a deep theological reason for their work, who wanted to educate, equip, and mobilize the church to do the work of building a beloved community. I thought it was pretty awesome. Well, the board meets twice a year, usually in a different place each time, and although we occasionally touch base at the new headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, I've been able to travel all over the place with this group. We always have some kind of action with farm workers, and we fulfill a role that they ask us to fulfill. We also invite farm workers to come and share with us their experiences, their challenges, their successes, and how we might best amplify their message. Since joining the board, I've been to La Paz, the old headquarters of the United Farm Workers and the home to the Chavez family, which is now a national monument. Immokalee, Florida, the site of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, an organization that works to implement the Fair Food Program. Dudley, North Carolina, to hear from the Farm Labor Organizing Committee, or FLOC, and visit labor camps for migrant and guest workers. Toledo, Ohio, to help with logistics for Flock's 50th anniversary. Bellingham, Washington, to hear from Familias Unidas por la Justicia. I'm not a great Spanish speaker. We call them FUJ, a union of farm workers in Washington State, and Community to Community Development, which is a local nonprofit there dedicated to a just society and healthy environments. Most recently, I traveled to San Jose, California, to visit the newest United Farm Worker office. It's in Salinas, not far from San Jose, and we participated in a picket at WellPick's office to urge the company to implement a union contract that they already have in place with the workers, but fail to fulfill. We also visited a farm that participates in something called the Equitable Food Initiative. And this is a way of doing business that incorporates the voices of the farm workers so that they don't have to fear retribution for reporting problems and challenges on the job, and that they also can work to be part of the solution. There are so many things I could tell you about what I've witnessed and how the stories of farm workers, their living conditions, their limitations, their isolation, and their human rights violations have caused me to listen to news stories about immigration policy, ICE, DACA, guest worker visas, all these stories with new ears. There's an awful lot of effort to create a narrative that Central and South Americans are unwelcome in the United States. But that's not really the case, of course. That effort serves to devalue the humanity and criminalize the images of our brothers and sisters so that we will not care how they are treated or what happens to them. By casting the unauthorized entry of migrant workers as a criminal activity, those who control the narrative would offer the guest worker visa program as a legalized form of entry for providing workers with documents. On the surface, it seems like a great solution, but what I've learned so far makes me very uneasy. The text I read from Exodus highlights a truth about empires. They elevate the legal citizens while dehumanizing the others. But they do not want the outsiders to actually be outside the empire. On the contrary, they need the outsiders to do the work of the empire. A very surface look back through the history of the United States will reveal the ways this country has used the labor of people to whom it granted very little or no rights in order to build this economy. Joseph, finding himself Pharaoh's right-hand man, establishes a system by which outsiders brought all they had in exchange for food and safety during a famine. But many years later, those in power forgot about Joseph's plan that saved Egypt from starvation. Pharaoh looked out and saw all the Israelite people working to build his empire, and he knew he could not let them go. He couldn't let them see their value as humans, and he couldn't let them organize for fear that they would leave the land. A couple years ago, I went to Wimauma, Florida, to visit Bethel Farmworker Ministry. Javier, one of the employees there, took me on a tour of the community. Migrant workers had settled the whole area and now have multiple generations on the land. They've bought homes. Their kids go to school there. They've been the workforce on the farms for several decades now, until recently. Javier showed me new housing that had been built for H-2A workers. H-2A is the guest worker program for agricultural workers. The buildings look like barracks, lined up one after the other on a clearing behind a row of trees. There's a tall fence surrounding the property that locks from the outside. Workers are locked on the property. They're brought to the fields to work and returned to the barracks whenever they're not working. They're taking jobs from the migrant workers because the corporations that own the land prefer this model of business. During our visit to Bellingham, a panel of experts discussed the guest worker visa program. In theory, it works like this. A grower needs workers, so they contract with a labor finder who goes to a place like Mexico to find workers. He has maybe 100 visas. The potential workers think this visa is a great opportunity to come here legally to the U.S. and work. The employer pays for transportation to the work site from Mexico and then back again when the growing season's over. Usually the end of the term is 6 months. The employer provides housing and transportation to and from the work site. The contract allows for a specified salary and guarantees a payment of 75 to 100% of that salary, with a safeguard for the grower of 25% given the possibility of a poor crop. The problem is that there are only 100 visas and hundreds of people who want them. How do you decide who gets these visas? People are desperate for work. They cling to the hope that the United States can provide this work that will save their families from starvation. So they get a loan for thousands of dollars to pay for this visa, something that is illegal, but who's doing anything about it? Then they travel, often not knowing where they're going, to this place where they find themselves completely isolated and treated like prisoners locked behind a gate. They live in fear of losing their visa and their paycheck because whoever they borrow the money from doesn't care what's happening to them. They want their money back. And often there is a threat to the safety of this person's family. If they get fired, the company doesn't pay to send them back home until they're sending everyone back. And if they try to get a job somewhere else to earn some money until the end of their visa program, they find they're not allowed to work anywhere other than for that particular employer. When I was in Immokalee, Florida, our host took us on a walking tour of the immediate area of the offices of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. She showed us one place where a man had recently been brought from another country and sold in chains as a farm worker. She showed us the spot where a panel truck used to sit, and it had served as housing for several men who were charged rent to live there and locked inside at night. They were brought there after they'd been working in the fields all day, and they had to pay for water to drink. And so, when they were told on payday when their checks came about all these line items of money that they owed for rent and water and food and transportation, and there was nothing left for them. Many people have no idea that these things are happening in the United States of America. People like you and me, we have to pay attention to these stories and shine the light on these problems. We have to care what happens. When we shop for fruits and vegetables, meats and dairy, we have to care at least as much about what gets sprayed on